Welcome to another episode of Bitches Love Sports. I'm Bitch 2.
I'm Bitch 1.
And I forgot to start recording the audio on my phone, which we actually haven't had to use a lot lately, which is good. But you never know.
Let's do it just in case. Because this one that you want to do, you will fucking need it.
All right, which means I have to align the audio again. So here we go. 3, 2, 1. Welcome to another episode of Bitches Love Sports. I'm Bitch 2.
I'm Bitch 1.
And outtakes are staying in because I don't get paid enough to edit this shit.
That was great.
You want us to get rid of outtakes, you know what to do. Buy our merch, subscribe to the podcast. Anyway, wow. I'm so glad that we have the opportunity to record today because I have a lot to say. So for the first time, maybe since this time last year, we have show notes. But
even I had a little minute.
It has. As I was explaining to my consistent and supportive co-host here, I only got so far. So it goes to a point, and you will probably notice it. We get to a point where it goes from I've got facts and figures, and then it's just all emotion. But all that emotion is half the reason why I wanted to record anyway. And it's also part of the reason why I'm kind of glad that we waited to record until today. Because had I had to discuss these topics on Tuesday or on Monday, there might have been even more emotion to deal with because I have thoughts and I have feelings. But before we get into those thoughts and feelings that I'm going to try my best to keep as coherent and reasonable as possible. First things
no
first.
No promises.
No promises. Absolutely not. First things first, shout outs and call outs. All right. So the first shout out goes to Milan Bolden Morris. Michigan's Milan Bolden Morris. By Michigan, I mean University of Michigan. Shout out to all our skater fans who might not automatically know what I mean when I open up a line with Michigan. Anyway, University of Michigan's Milan Bolden Morris became the first female grad assistant to coach for a Big Ten school. So a few months ago, we mentioned her on a podcast when she was hired for this role. Yeah. And it was a big deal just for her to be named to the role. But since then, she's had an actual opportunity to act in the role. And on Saturday, September 3rd, it became official when she actually took the field in said role. So Bolden Morris, whose brother is Michigan defensive end Mike Morris, is working specifically with quarterbacks this season while she pursues a master's degree in public policy. She recently earned a master's in sports management from Georgetown this past spring. So she's really
You're
doing
crushing it all over, dog.
100%.
All over.
I actually can't wait to see what she ends up doing in the world of sports because it sounds like she's like off to a pretty good start.
Yeah.
One quote from her says, "Growing up watching my dad coach my brother, it has always been my dream to be a part of a football team in some form. So this opportunity is allowing me to live out a dream of mine, especially working with quarterbacks," Bolden Morris said in March. Coming from the basketball world, guards and quarterbacks are one and the same. Both have the ability to make decisions under duress, read defenses, take care of the ball, and execute with precision and accuracy.
What does duress mean? It's like stress.
Stress, yeah. So yeah, I can actually think of a few roles in the world of sports that could use some guidance when it comes to making decisions under duress. I was reading that and I was like, yo, can you come talk to our jammers? like for real, no balls involved, but if you have some recommendations, like
please, we'll take it.
Yeah, I'm down for the discussion.
We'll take the recommendations.
The next shout out goes to Francis Tiafoe. The 24-year-old became the first American man to reach the U.S. Open semifinal in 16 years and the first black man to do it since Arthur Ashe did it in 1972. So shout out to him.
Only 50 years ago.
Now, an interesting fact about Tiafoe is he is the son of immigrants from Sierra Leone. His father was a maintenance worker at a local tennis center where coaches discovered his little boy hitting balls against a wall. I think that is so cool that like his dad was doing maintenance work and he was just like out there playing and somebody discovered this kid and was like, yo, let me coach you up.
Yeah.
And now here he is like literally making history. Like it's one of those things that reminds me like, okay, this is why there are some people in this world who just like love to coach and who are especially suited for this role. because not everybody would just like see a little black boy and be like, you know what, like instead of you just hitting balls against a wall, let me show you some things. So that's pretty cool. Now, if you kept up with US Open, you know Tiafoe ended up being defeated by Alcaraz in the semifinal. And this was like I wouldn't even call it a failing of Tiafoe. Like, honestly, this was an insane match. So now one interesting thing about it was Tiafoe was interviewed after his match, but before Alcaraz played his match before the semifinal, and they were like, you know, what are you hoping for, you know, going into the match, you know, based on, like, depending on who wins. And Tiafoe said something about how he hoped both players played a really long match and ended up worn out before Friday, you know. and interestingly enough, he was able to manifest that much. Before facing Tiafoe, Alcaraz played a match that lasted over 5 hours. It went to almost 3 a.m. But this kid still showed up on Friday and showed the fuck out.
Yeah.
I was actually working while their match was going on, so mostly I was listening to what was happening. And every now and then, I got a chance to look at the screen, and I would just look, and I was like, this kid is really fucking fast.
Yeah.
Like, insanely fast. I even think I found a second to tweet, and I said something like, Alcaraz's quad muscles need their own Twitter account, because good God. just watching him was insane. And I don't mean just laterally. I mean back, forward, laterally, diagonally.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what made it tough for Tiafoe was that a lot of times what you see in tennis is you see players that try to challenge their opponents mostly laterally, right?
Right.
But this
nobody
kid...
Nobody make it there, dog.
Right.
Well.
But this kid was challenging Tiafoe to go back, forward, laterally, all sorts of things. And there were certain times where it's like the ball was going in a certain direction so fast to a certain point where you could like see Tiafoe kind of make a movement towards it, but his feet never really moved. It's almost like Alcaraz was going so fast that Tiafoe, like, his feet literally could not keep up with where the ball was going. It was insane. And like I said, not a failing on Tiafoe. Like, what I saw from Alcaraz was some shit that I haven't seen from a male tennis player ever. Like, kid is insane. So,
yeah, sometimes, you know, Spain, like, produces some good athletes every once in a while.
Right. So Alcaraz ended up defeating Tiafoe in 5 sets. I don't really know how to say tennis scores out loud because there's like the score in the parentheses. I'm gonna work on that. But he won in 5 sets. And he ultimately beat Casper Ruud of Norway, becoming the youngest man to win a Grand Slam title since Rafael Nadal. Now, Rafael Nadal was also 19 years old when he won, but Alcaraz is 19 years old and 129 days. So that makes him slightly younger than how old Rafael Nadal was when he became the youngest man to win a Grand Slam title in 2005.
It's okay, Rafa, we still love you.
So Tiafoe literally said of Alcaraz, I've never played a player who moves as well. He's going to be a problem for a very long time. So overall, this championship came at the end of a pretty epic week for Alcaraz. Just to get to the final, he played 3 straight 5-set matches. The final itself, he won in 4 sets. Thank goodness for him.
Yeah.
But before that, it was 3 matches that went on for 5 sets that had him on the court for almost 5 hours. So in the round of 16, that one went 3 hours, 54 minutes. The quarterfinal was 5 hours, 15 minutes. And the semifinal was 4 hours and 19 minutes.
Can you imagine playing for that long?
No. And I tweeted,
no.
I was like, I don't know what I would do if a roller derby bout actually could go on for like 4 hours.
We barely make it through one.
Right.
It's 2 30-minute halves.
Two 30-minute halves, you know, by the time you get through halftime and all the timeouts, you're looking at like 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours, you know, if you end up in a tiebreak situation or, you know, something like that. But
hardly ever happens.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people, because tennis isn't a contact sport, people don't realize the amount of intensity and energy that goes into tennis. But it's just like, yeah, you're doing sprints for four to five hours.
That's insane.
It's insane. It really is. So shout out to Alcaraz, who really seems to have the potential to change the game. And I really like that he is, because when TFL was making his run, people were like, is he going to be the Serena of men's tennis? And the reason why I didn't make that comparison myself was because Serena stood for a lot more than just a Black woman doing big things in tennis. One, her style of play, like the power and aggression that she brought to tennis, was something that hadn't really been seen, or at least hadn't been valued in women's tennis. Yeah. She literally changed the way people prepared for and trained to play this game. She changed what a good tennis player looks like. Not only that, like not only in terms of what they look like in terms of their athletic ability, but she got a lot of criticism for just being her size, for being as thick as she is as a woman. You know, like she got criticism for certain things that she wore. She got criticism for the way that her body moved, as though she can control the fact that her ass bounces when she's running back and forth across the court. Like, seriously, you know? But it's like, you know, people have...
so fucking dumb sometimes.
People had issues with everything from the size of her butt to the size of her breasts to the size of her thighs to the things that she wore, to the way that she spoke, to her hair. Like, she really had to break barriers for herself in order to be valued and respected as a tennis player. Like, she had to go into spaces where people, like, literally booed her, couldn't stand her. Yeah.
It's called jealousy.
Yeah, you know, her and her
sister. Haters gonna be hate, so.
Whereas Tiafo, like, while he is doing things that no Black man has done in tennis since Alcaraz, and that is amazing, he isn't having to deal with that in terms of, like, his appearance and just being accepted as a human being. Unless you count how critical people are of him and him making a mess by his bench. Apparently, people make fun of him for sweating a lot. But, yeah, that's different.
It's not like he can control that shit either, dog. Like, what?
Yeah, but Alcaraz, on the other hand, who represents Spain, by the way, for anyone who didn't know that.
I didn't say that before for no reason.
Alcaraz has the potential to really change how the game is played. Because if there are people who are watching what he did during the U.S. Open, and they start training to be able to defeat Alcaraz, it's going to change what men's tennis looks like a little bit. It's going to change what we see in terms of agility, speed, endurance, conditioning, like muscle, muscle mass.
He's changing the game. Players.
Yeah. And even the environment, you know, like that was something people talked about a lot with Serena, because, you know, during her last games in the U.S. Open, the crowd was insane, just absolutely electric. It sounded like a basketball game, you know, like they kept having to be like, thank you, which is like all they ever say when the crowd gets too loud. You know, they're never like, please be quiet, or, you know, shut up. They're just like, thank you. And then they just keep saying thank you louder and louder until the crowd shuts up.
Why is always the tennis crowd so quiet?
I mean, it's one of those traditions of the game. It's kind of like golf, where the players are expected to be able to concentrate and focus, and so you want the crowd to be quiet, which is something that's valued in other sports too. That's why, like, when it comes to, like, football teams, for example, and home team advantage, you expect the crowd to be quieter when the home team has the ball, so that the quarterback can more easily communicate with his players, right? That doesn't always happen. A lot of people are expecting that to not be the case this weekend when the Bengals come to Dallas, but that's a different conversation we'll get to in a second. But yeah, a lot of times, in order for players to play at their best, people are people say that it's better for the crowd to be quiet, you know? And so that's been a standard, you know, and it's an expectation. But during the US Open, it was hard. It was hard during Serena's matches. And when Alcaraz was playing, it was hard during his matches too. They started doing the Olé cheer. So then, you know, the people in the house who were there for Tiafo, you know, they had to counter it. But, you know, there's no real specific cheer for Black people. So they were just kind of loud. I mean, that, well, that's a different conversation for it.
We'll go Flynn for this one too.
Right. But yeah, so yeah, it was hype in there. So I really feel like Alcaraz has the potential to bring back men's tennis in a way, because, like, let's be real, for a little while, Serena and Naomi and Coco and Venus, they kind of hijacked the tennis world, and the eyes were on women's tennis. And I do think there's still the potential for that with certain players, like, you know, Raducanu has the hearts of the people. Naomi Osaka has the hearts of the people.
Yeah.
You know, if they get to the point where they have that star status again, we'll see women's tennis be, I don't know if it'll be as popular, but we'll see it, you know, maintain its popularity. But this kid, Alcaraz, the splash that he's making and the way that people are looking at him and talking about him, because not only is his game, you know, insane, like, you know, he's young, he's good looking.
Yeah.
He's definitely a star in the making right now. So it'll be really interesting to see where he goes, what he does, you know, and the fact that, like, he was doing his interview and he was like, you know, my English isn't good, right? But as a person who has tried to speak both English and Spanish, I'm just like, I can understand you. Your English is fine. You speak English better than I speak Spanish. Like, if there was a derby bout and somebody came up to me and was like, okay, we need you to do an interview in Spanish, yeah, I'd be like, ha. As Spain. Come here.
I would gladly help in that situation.
So I'm just like, hey, you sound good enough to me. You're good enough for interviews and commercials. And then whenever he did start speaking Spanish, the crowd went crazy. I don't know what he said. I think I heard something about having to have guts and, you know, put his heart into it, and leave everything on the court. That was about it. So I'm just like, yo, people love you, bro.
Already. You gotta win him over.
Already. So yeah, that's gonna be exciting. So spent a little bit longer on that shout out than I intended. So we'll run through the next couple. The NWSL, they actually signed the collective bargaining agreement recently. Now, I think there were some signatures on it before, but the last time we talked about this revolutionary collective bargaining agreement with the NWSL, we talked about the fact that they had kind of decided on what should be valued in that agreement, but it wasn't set in stone. And I think we said something about how there were different things that had to happen between the time that they decided equal pay should be important and it actually coming to fruition.
Yes.
So it actually came to fruition and they decided to do it in a celebratory way. So on Tuesday, September 6th, a ceremony was held at Audi Field, which is the home of the of Angel City FC, for the signing of the new collective bargaining agreement between the women's and men's national teams and U.S. soccer. So Megan Rapinoe said, there's so much from a global perspective. We've got the World Cup coming up next year. Sponsorship dollars, the amount FIFA puts into it, this whole infrastructure around the global game, I think needs to increase so much. All the results are there. The 2019 World Cup was amazing. The Euros were amazing. Champions League was amazing. And then in regards to the NWSL, she said, domestically, our league still has a long way to go. We're still dealing with a lot of issues that we shouldn't have to. The potential and the springboard that hopefully this can provide for the league and also the global game is huge. So basically what Rapinoe is acknowledging is like, hey, this is a landmark deal. Absolutely. However, there's still a lot of work to be done. I really respect the fact that she's acknowledging that, because I think sometimes whenever things happen and social pressure is a result, people expect things to happen so quickly.
Yeah.
They want everything right now because they're like, this is the right thing to do. This is how it should happen.
Yeah.
And if it takes a year or two, it's almost like people jump to the conclusion that nobody's trying or nobody cares when that is not always the case.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's just that things take time, especially whenever you're getting into things that, that relate to finances and legality. Things just, they take time. There's a process, and it doesn't mean that nobody cares. As a matter of fact, a lot of times it's a sign that they do care, because they want things done right.
And properly,
When you don't do things right, what you're doing is you're leaving the door open for things to be overturned, for things to be canceled out, for things to not be set in stone, and for somebody to come along and be like, oh, well, look at all these loopholes. I don't have to do shit that this relates to. But whenever you take your time and you make sure that the verbiage is right and you make sure that the contracts are right and you make sure that the way everything is related to the law and precedents is in order, that's when you can say, okay, I'm making this change not only for me and my feelings right now, but also for the future of the people who might have to deal with these decisions.
Yeah.
Right. Not doing things right is why the right for Black people to vote is still up for discussion every few years. you know, shit like that. You know what I'm saying?
But this is the thing, like when shit like that happens and like you make the headline of like, oh, this is happening, when in reality isn't happening yet, you make, like, a lot of people just make the assumption that they don't, they're not going to read the article and they're not going to take a deeper dive into it. Mm-hmm. And they just stop fighting because in their mind, it's already done. So a lot of people just stop doing anything because it's already done, quote unquote, when in reality it isn't. So you, as like, you need to keep fighting regardless what it is. I promise you there's always more to be done. Always.
Facts, 100% facts. And I think that's why it's so important for the public to be educated, because a lot of times those headlines are written the way that they're written in response to social pressure.
Correct.
It's like internally people are like, I know we have a lot of work to do, but we just need to make people think that we've made more progress than what we actually have. Because this is what they want to see.
Yeah.
We need the clicks. We need them to believe that we're making this progress. So tell them what they want to hear, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, even as a fan, the more educated you are on where things actually stand, the more accurate information that's going to be out there, you know? So it's like, if that's something you want accurate information, you want transparency,
yeah,
you want to actually know where things stand in return, in terms of the fight that you're fighting,
mm-hmm,
then it's going to come with you and the actual impression by the fans that you actually value accurate information and not just headlines.
Right. And then like you get into conversations with other people that are actually also fans or whatever. And like, oh, we did this. And then you can be like, well, actually,
yes,
we did not yet. We're on the way, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Don't shift your focus yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you can, you know, keep your people in the fight with you.
I just realized I made like this whole PowerPoint to like show pictures.
I was wondering, I'm like, I don't know if you made that to like show it or just for your own amusement.
Oh, we actually have the option to show slides in here. All right. Achievement unlocked. Oh, I made this PowerPoint before we started and then I forgot all about it. Okay. So Tiafo and Alcaraz is who we just talked about.
Yeah.
And if you are listening to this and you're like, why the fuck is she talking about a PowerPoint? It's because we have video podcasting capabilities on Spotify. So if you actually like to see us,
please
find us on Spotify or soon to be YouTube. We're going to start uploading episodes to YouTube. So that'll be fun.
But great.
Anyway, I have like one more slide in this. So y'all get to enjoy this lovely picture of Coach Charles Huff, who is the head coach.
That made me so happy when I read that. It made me so fucking happy.
He is the head coach of the University of Marshall Thundering Herd. Now, you might be wondering why we're talking about the University of Marshall. So here's the thing. So what happens sometimes with American college football is schools will pay a quote-unquote lesser opponent to entice them to come play a road game that they'll likely lose. Because it's like, if a school is expected to lose, why would you spend all that money to play a road game, right?
Right.
So sometimes these bigger schools, especially like for stuff like their home opener, or, you know, I went to Vanderbilt, so it would happen for homecoming a lot because you've got these all these alumni coming in. You don't want to play a conference opponent, SEC, and lose. So they would invite somebody else to come in for like homecoming and home openers and things of that nature, right? Yeah. And so, you know, the expectation is you bring these teams in, you win the game, you know, everybody's happy. The school got paid, y'all won the game, yada, yada, yada. What happened with Notre Dame and Marshall, however...
Notre Dame, like, it makes me even happier. For the single fact that it's a Catholic school, I don't have any beef with Notre Dame, but it's just a Catholic school, so... So
Notre Dame paid the Thundering Herd of Marshall $1.25 million to travel to Notre Dame on Saturday, September 10th. Now, the thing is, these schools are under no contractual obligation to actually lose the game. That would be illegal, but it's just assumed that they will. However, the Fighting Irish lost to the Thundering Herd 26-21. And this is why Charles Huff looked so happy.
Yes!
He collected the bag and he collected the W. And he's a black head coach.
My duty!
I would look like that too.
My dude.
Super. Huge shout out to this coach and to Marshall and their team and to the whole school. Y'all came up in two very big ways. Congratulations. I wish you nothing but the best this season. I can't guarantee that I'm actually going to keep up with your team. The world of sports is a very big world, and we have a lot to talk about. So, but I do hope that you have reasons to make headlines in the future. And if that happens, I will definitely be paying attention.
Yes.
But yeah, props to you. Now, The same thing happened with Texas A&M, right down
I'm also happy to have that too, because I don't like Texas A&M.
Texas A&M, they paid Appalachian State $1.5 million and then lost 17-14. So, I mean, if you're... So, I partially think that this may be in part due to, like, you know, NIL deals, because I feel like it gives schools not only a little bit of incentive based on location or, you know, what companies or boosters might have access to entice better skilled players, but I think it's also making players, like, feel like they should work harder, because it's like, even if you don't go to a big school, if you can amass a big enough social media following just through your success and your own highlights, you can get a little something, you know?
Oh yeah. And like more, if you're like, if you're school, if you're really good in your team, whatever sport that you play in the small school, and then you're invited to the shit and win, you're gonna get a lot more exposure than you probably thought you would.
Exactly. So I feel like a lot of these players
or get a full ride somewhere else. Like you might get, you know, like, hey, come over here.
Exactly. So I feel like a lot of these players feel like they just have a lot more to play for now. And it's and it's showing. The landscape is showing.
Yes.
Speaking of, I just realized I didn't put anything about Caleb Williams and their win over Stanford on the list. Okay, so this was a real fun game to watch. I started watching this game, and I remember Simi Fehoko went to Stanford. So I go to Twitter to see if he's tweeting about the game, because, you know, I like to live tweet. And I'm like, well, if you like to live tweet, we can live tweet together, Simi.
We can.
So he was. He was, until the game started to run away from Stanford. I don't remember what the score was. I'm going to pull up the box score just so I can, like, give an accurate account of what happened. But yeah, there was like a solid hour and something that I was just like, I guess Simi just not gonna tweet no more. Like, damn.
Well,
he did come back and say something later in the game. He was like, all we need is a stop. And I'm just like, I was thinking to myself, like, y'all are already down. Like, a stop really won't help. And
no, you need a turnover and a TD. That's what you need. Not a stop.
But all I said was like, you make it sound so simple, Simi. He did not respond. let's see. How did that game go?
USC,
Stanford, box score. I don't remember exactly what happened. I remember texting you at one point, and I was like, your boy is showing the fuck out.
Yeah.
Because Caleb, once again, they call him Superman for a reason. Oh, wait, no, that's last year's game. We need this year's game.
Fucking Caleb. Live in a mark wherever you go, dog.
Yeah, at some point, we're going to have to, like, actually dive into the changes that were made with USC. But it's like, you know, like we talked about before, Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams both went from Oklahoma to USC. But Lincoln Riley took more than just Caleb Williams with him. And then there were other people that transferred from other schools to go play for Lincoln Riley and with Caleb Williams. And, I mean, for very good reason. With, yeah, with Caleb, it's not that he's just good. You know, is he 19 yet? I think he's 19. But he has, like, this type of leadership presence that, like, I love to see on the sideline. Because it's like, he's a star, and he knows it. You can tell by how he carries himself in the public eye and on social media. But during games, he's not, like, chilling, drinking water by himself. He's talking to players. He's, you know, in huddles of, you know, like, when the receivers are talking. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even when the defense is talking, you know, he's, you know, listening to what other coaches have to say. Like, he's very much involved in the running and the culture of that team.
Yeah.
So I like what I'm seeing from him as a player and as a leader on that team. And I'm so excited about following his career.
Yeah, the Cowboys might need a QB soon.
Right?
Just saying, Caleb. Just saying.
Shit, call him now. Once again, we'll get to that later. But
I know. Because I knew I would forget it later. I'm like, if I don't say it now, I know it's going to be gone.
Yeah, but somebody call Caleb Williams and see what he's doing this Sunday.
I wouldn't be mad.
I would not at all, because I'm just, if somebody's like, would you rather have Caleb Williams or Cooper Rush on the field, I'd be like, honestly, like, you really want me to answer that?
If I answer this question and you promise me that you're gonna put my answer on the field, I have zero doubts that the same answer is gonna be like from both of us.
Caleb, dude, and he does not look 19.
No, he looks, yes.
I'll be looking at him, and then my brain is like, he's 19, bitch.
Yeah.
Stop. And I'm like, no, there's no fucking way. I don't believe it. Yeah. So Williams threw for 341 yards and 4 touchdowns, with 2 of those going to Jordan Addison, leading number 10 Southern California past Stanford with a score of 41-28.
Damn.
Yeah. Lincoln Riley said, look at 12 months ago when he was talking about a reference to the 42-28 beating nearly the same score as Saturday the Trojans took at home from upset-hungry Stanford on September 11th last year. So completely flipped the script.
Yep.
Let's see. Are there any other significant stats? Where's the box score? I want the box score. Nobody's going to give me the box score. Y'all suck. So USC came out the gate hot, 7-0, 14-0. Then late in the first quarter, Stanford finally scored 14-7. Early in the second quarter, USC goes up 21-7, 28-7. Mm-hmm. Stanford answered back 28-14. I think that was somewhere around the time when Simi was like, all we need is to stop. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's 28-14. No, I think it was later in the game, actually. It might have been 38-14 when he said that. Because I feel like it was in the second half. But USC went up 28-14, 35-14, then 38-14, and then 41-14, and then 41-21, and then Stanford had the final score. They got a touchdown, an extra point to make it 41-28.
That's, you're not coming back from that, dog.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, no notes on that. Just super happy for Caleb Williams being in the market that he's in, being on the team that he's on, and what this will mean for his career and yes, everything for him moving forward. So, you've already got a fan.
Yep.
And I think, let's see what else we have in terms of shout-outs. I didn't put any notes for this, but Texas almost beat Alabama. I don't remember the score. That's something else that we might talk about more as the season goes on, basically, as we see how Alabama does this year, mainly because
they lost by like 2 points or something. It wasn't really close.
Yeah, it was super close. And I'll let you look that one up while I talk about how critical Nick Saban was of NIL deals over the offseason, because I feel like that's the main reason for discussing stories like this, is that I really want to see what happens with this team and how Nick Saban responds.
20-19.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember it being really close because for a little while, I actually thought Texas was going to win.
I mean, that was, anyways.
I don't remember what was happening that day. I don't remember if I was working or sleeping during that game. My life has been wild the past few weeks, y'all.
I vouch for that.
Like we always say, being a bitch who loves sports is exhausting.
Yes.
Especially 100%. When part of that love of sports involves playing a sport and coaching the team that you're playing for and running the business side of the team that you coach and also play for, while still trying to maintain love for the other teams and sports and athletes that you love. All right.
And have a life, you know, and breathe and eat and sleep and work.
Yeah. I'm like, did I do anything that didn't involve sports the past 2 weeks? Cause you're like, have a life. I'm like, I haven't even been to pole class in a while.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. We'll find balance later. But yeah, in the offseason, Nick Saban was very critical of like NIL deals and the changing landscape of college football. And I was just kind of like thinking to myself, listening to all his comments about it, I'm like, yo, things change. Like, you have to adapt. I feel like if his team were to run into an obstacle based on like, let's say a rules change or maybe some new strategy that were introduced, he would want them to adapt. He would want them to step the fuck up and figure out how to win. And I feel like as a recruiter, you have to do that. As a coach, you have to do that. As a leader, you have to do that, you know? So I think it'll be interesting to see just like what Alabama does and how Coach Saban responds. And not only for the sake of his team, but also because there are so many people who look up to him in general. There are people who look up to him because of the mindset and philosophy towards winning and competition that he has. So it's like when you start blaming all these outside factors, it's like, what message are you sending? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think Alabama will still have a great year, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But
I really like watching them play. Like, they're, like, physical, like, fast pace.
Yes.
Like, get that first down, like, now, bitch. Like, 5 minutes ago. Like, fucking getting this bitch.
But it's
a fun team to watch.
I think Nick Saban responds to all of the things coming up regarding NIL and regarding the teams that are changing conferences, like USC. I think people like him and what they have to say are going to have a big impact on college sports. So it'll be interesting. And then finally, Jackson State. So shout out to Deion Sanders. And I think I have another slide for that. Woo!
Hey, look at us. Who would have thought?
So shout out to Deion Sanders and Jackson State, who elevated to 2-0 on the season after defeating the Tennessee State Tigers 16-3. Nothing else to really say about that right now, except, you know, I'm a big supporter of Deion Sanders, so shout out to Tim for that.
Yes.
Also, shout out to his son, Shedeur Sanders, who is the sophomore quarterback of Jackson State and a preseason All-American. But the shout out to him is for him sharing his wealth. So he has an NIL deal with Beats by Dre, and he gifted everybody on his team with $300 headphones. So, you know, props to him. That's actually something that's relatively common on the pro level in football. For the highest paid players, which are often quarterbacks.
Do you think Dad gets bets for everybody?
Dad buy everybody a bet? Or give them a DirecTV subscription?
Do you think that CD brings Chipotle every day to practice?
Oh God, I hope not. Then that might explain a lot. Anyway. But no, I remember a while back when I was in Nashville and I had the opportunity to work with one of the new stations there for a very short period of time. And the quarterback at the time, I remember he bought his offensive line, he bought them all Rolexes. And it was because their season had gotten off to a particularly good start. And so because his O-line had done such a great job of protecting him, he got them all Rolexes and took them to a nice dinner. As a matter of fact, I remember another night because at the time I was working at Ruth's Chris. And him and the O-line came in for dinner.
Oh, nice.
You know, so yeah, like he would do stuff like that. Like, you know, that's y'all cool. are protecting me. Y'all make me look good. Yeah. I'm going to reward you with gifts and dinners and stuff.
Yes.
Good
for you.
And so, yeah, I just like that, you know, Shedeur Sanders is not just, you know, keeping everything for himself, but, you know, he feels like this is an opportunity to connect with and reward the team.
Yeah.
So props to him for showing that level of maturity.
Yes.
And then I put on here something about the Browns logo. The Browns logo is so cute. Hold on, let me show it to you. I can pull it up on the screen. Well, maybe I can. I don't know. Let me just try it real quick. I'll throw it in the slideshow if I can.
What? You only have like 10 tabs?
It's because Google Chrome crashed and closed all my shit literally this morning.
Okay, I'm like, wow, that is amazing.
I know, you are so ready to be happy for me.
Yes.
I have to find the actual video because I gotta find the video now. It's so cute.
That is really fucking adorable.
The headline says, Cleveland Browns unveil 2022 field design with retro elf logo at midfield. So I'm gonna switch this chair so I can show y'all this because I saw this video and I was like, this is the most adorable thing I have ever seen.
I love going for the fans have spoken, and here it is. You are about to see what the fans have decided our field will look like at First Energy for the
trolls.
Season home opener on Sunday. Brownie the Elf is back. So many of
Brownie
you loved
the
it
elf.
That is the winning design.
I'm not a Browns fan at all, but I need some merch
field
with this fucking angry ass elf
on
it.
The Browns Jets game on Sunday, and incidentally, this will be what the field looks like for the entire season. Team management, and I love the way they handled this. They put it in the hands of the fans. They gave fans multiple options, told them to vote online, and hundreds of thousands of folks did just that. And you're looking at the winner. Brownie at
the mascot,
midfield. And then in
the
end
logo.
Zones, you've got the Browns font
so
with the helmet and the AFC logo on opposite sides. I happen to love...
I love it. I need a shirt or something with that on it because that is just
this is adorable. It's just so cute. It's just cute.
Angry elf. All right, so now we get into some of the real headlines, starting with Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver suspended 1 year, fined $10 million for racist and sexist comments and behavior. So now, if you look in the description of this episode, we're going to put a link to the episode where we actually talked about this in depth when the headlines first came out. And at the time, our biggest thing was like, okay, he said the N-word a few times, not directed at anybody. It was all situations where he was like quoting somebody or something of that nature. But the stories of how he treated women employees and how intimidating he was even towards other men. And I don't mean intimidating because he's got like power and men are intimidated. Like, no, he was actually like, he actually did hurtful and abusive things to them. I was like, okay, that should be a way bigger deal than the fact that he said the N-word a couple of times.
Yeah.
Now, had he directed it at someone or actually like engaged in racist like hiring practices or something, I might feel differently. But I was just like, yo, he is like terrorizing, regardless of the language that he uses. He is like terrorizing workplace employees. Like, what the fuck? But it feels like that same narrative has continued with people's responses towards what has happened with the ruling and everything. It really seems like people are still so focused on he said the N-word. And I'm just like, so anybody who's like wondering like why I'm not that big on it, it's because it's like the Black community itself is split on what the proper response should be when somebody's quoting it, right? Me personally, it's like, I can see how somebody, especially if you don't actually know any Black people, how you might think it's okay to quote it sometimes, right? So for example, Jay-Z, he's an international superstar. A lot of his fans are not Black. A lot of his fans are not Black Americans. He put out a song called Niggas in Paris, right? So you would think if you know what your fan base is and you put out a song with this name, you would know at some point somebody who's not Black is probably going to say it, unless like they can't do certain things. Like, can they go in Spotify and search for that song? Like, the song was a hit. It still is a hit. Which means that there are people who are not Black who have to be like, oh yeah, what I want in the background for this particular game, this particular show, we're going to put, you know, that song by Jay-Z that was a hit. Like, no, somebody has had to say this out loud. Somebody who is not Black has had to go on Spotify and type in Niggas in Paris. Like, somebody has requested this song who is not Black, right? Like, let's just go ahead and accept that that's the thing that's happened. And I'm not saying that that makes it okay. What I'm saying is that there are some contexts in which saying the word is benign. And I know some people who literally do not care. I also know some people who care a lot, right? But because it sounds like, even in the findings, what they said in regards to use of the N-word, they said, shout out to Dwayne Rankin for uploading screenshots of the entire ruling and everything that was stated by the NBA. If y'all don't follow Dwayne on Twitter, he, like, if you're a Phoenix Suns fan or a Phoenix sports fan in general, like, he is the person to follow, because not only does he always have like the greatest content during games, he is the first to post his post-game interviews. Anything significant that happens, he's posting it. So make sure that you follow this guy. But one of the key findings was Mr. Sarver, on at least 5 occasions during his tenure with the Suns Mercury organization, repeated the N-word when recounting the statement of others. So even they did not find that he actually said it to anybody. They found that he quoted it, right? And so I'm just like, okay, people don't like that. I get it. Cool. But other key findings were, Mr. Sarver engaged in instances of inequitable conduct toward female employees, made many sex-related comments in the workplace, made inappropriate comments about the physical appearance of female employees and other women, and on several occasions engaged in inappropriate physical conduct toward male employees. Mr. Sarver engaged in demeaning and harsh treatment of employees, including by yelling at and cursing at them. And if you listen to the episode that we posted before where we talked about this, there were things like, there was a particular player that they either were trying to keep on the team or get traded to the team. And he made some kind of comment about hiring a stripper to get pregnant by this person. There were employees who were driven to the point of considering like suicide and shit. And so I'm like, I don't care if he never said the N-word at all. I don't care if he was a Black man.
No, he's trash.
Like,
he's
this behavior is unacceptable, you know? So some of the other things that came from the findings, some of the key points regarding the suspension is that he will not be able to be present at any NBA or WNBA team facility, including any office, arena, or practice facility. So none of them. Also, he cannot attend or participate in any NBA or WNBA event or activity, including games, practices, or business partner activity. He cannot represent the Suns or Mercury in any public or private capacity. He cannot have any involvement with the business or basketball operations of the Suns or Mercury. He also cannot have any involvement in the business, governance, or activities of either the NBA or WNBA, including attending or participating in meetings of either league's board and their associated board committees. But also, that's just for a year. And then finally, additionally, the Suns and Mercury organization must fulfill a series of requirements for workplace improvements set forth and monitored by the NBA. These requirements, among other things, include retaining an outside firm to evaluate and make recommendations with respect to workplace training programs, policies and procedures, and hiring and compensation practices, with a focus on fostering a diverse, inclusive, and respectful workplace. They must conduct regular and anonymous workplace culture surveys and respond to survey results with specific action plans. They must immediately report to the league any instances or allegations of significant misconduct by any employee. For a period of 3 years, provide the league with regular reports related to steps taken by the organization to address these requirements, and they must follow league direction for remediation and improvement of workplace issues if and as they arise. So the reason why I'm probably not going to go much more into it than that right now is because there's a lot of people who are still giving their takes on this. There are people saying that Chris Paul and Devin Booker need to make statements right now. Al Sharpton has come out with a response. The Suns and Mercury organization, they came out with a response basically saying that, you know, they support the league's findings and they're going to do what the league says. So yeah, a lot of people are still speaking their piece, and there are pieces on the board that are still moving. And so if we are going to spend 20, 30 minutes on it, I want to get as much information and as many takes and responses as possible. So do you have anything to add about it?
No, we talked about it in depth the first time, and we'll revisit when people have their statements out.
Yeah, I just really, regardless of what your stance is on the N-word and its use, I really want people to look at the mistreatment of women and the mistreatment of actual people as something a little bit more significant than if somebody says a word that, you know, thing. Culturally they shouldn't
say. This is
say.
The thing. Like, with the N-word, like, me, personally, I didn't even know anything about it because I'm not from here. I didn't know what it means. I didn't know there were more than one N-word. I didn't know...
You mean like in terms of the ER versus the A?
Yes. And like, to me, depending who says it, it sounds the same. And that's just me being English, not my first language. And it's being very ignorant. Like, and you need to have people of color around you to educate you in that scenario. But that's something that you're ignorant, and that's something that you can fix, and that's something that you can learn, right? When you're a fucking bully and a piece of shit person, that's who you are. So there is the difference of, like, learning what a word means or when can you or cannot say, whereas when you're being a piece of shit to another human being on purpose.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense. And before y'all get on the, you know, he's from this country, he should know. That's not how language works.
No.
Like, you don't have any Black people around you, especially the type of Black people who will actually explain to you that it's an issue and why. Mm-hmm. You will hear certain things in context and think it's okay to use them in a certain context. Even though we take so many classes and read books and there are all these rules regarding language, at the end of the day, the way people actually learn how to use a language is through context and through conversations with other people.
Agreed.
That's why you have someone who's not from this country come to this country. And, like, you know, when you first started hearing the word, like, where was it? Was it music, movies, TV?
Well, it was music mostly. And then, like, people around me just saying it left and right. There were also Black people. So to me, like, it was just like, oh, it's like saying dude. To me, that's what it meant. When I first started hearing it, it was just like, you know, hey, what's up, dude, or whatever, you know, whatever. And then it's like, my piece of shit ex-husband started using it the other way, the worst one, I guess. And I just didn't, in my mind, it made no connection because, like, whatever, like, it's just saying dude. And then you learn, and, like, me, I ask questions like, I just, what is duress means? Like, I have no problem whatsoever because I actually want to learn and I actually don't want to make a fool of myself later, you know? So
I respect that.
I will ask and be like, yo, so, and I might say it like, what does this mean? And I might say it then because I don't fucking know. And then be like, oh, I'm just going to keep that one to myself from now on, you know, but it's as easy as that. Like, and you have like, literally like she just said, like, I will respect you much more if you're like asking why or what or how or whatever it is, than just like say it without feeling like no consequence is going to be, you know, no, that's not. It's not.
Precisely. So we'll probably talk more about that next week. Next up, the WNBA Finals, what we know after games 1 and 2. What we know is that anybody who thought Asia Wilson couldn't be even badder of a bitch, she just, oh my God. She was like, let me show you. So on Sunday, the Aces won 67-64. And I think a lot of people looked at that score and they were like, oh, this is going to be a good series. But one of the things that happened during that game on Sunday was that a certain Kelsey Plum didn't really show up the way Asia Wilson thought that she should. And so Asia Wilson's feedback to her teammate was, we need you to get your shit together.
Yeah. But that's something that I would say, too.
It is. And when I heard this, because I read it, and I kind of wondered, I wonder if she said it like, we need you to get your shit together. Or it's like, look, we need you to get your shit together.
Yeah.
I don't know which one it is. probably the latter, you know, considering that Kelsey actually did, you know, step up.
Yeah.
and so what ended up happening is on Tuesday in their win over the Sun, Kelsey Plum, Asia Wilson, and Chelsea Gray combined to score 67 points. So you got to think, the Sun themselves scored 71 points. And these three players on the Aces scored 67 points by themselves. So that to me says that even though this series is about to make its way to Connecticut, in the Mohegan Sun Arena, this series is pretty much over, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know if the Connecticut Sun are going to get a win, which I would like to see happen because, you know, don't get me wrong. I love Jonquel Jones. Mm-hmm. I love Juana Bonner, and I don't want to see them get swept. But I've been a fan of Asia Wilson and Chelsea Gray longer. Mm-hmm. I'm a bigger fan of those two people. And I'm even becoming a fan of the team. For a little while, I wasn't sure how to feel about the team because of the decision with Becky Hammon and, you know, paying her what they were paying her, which is, looks to me like she's earned her money.
Even seeing her on the sideline
and the way that she is with that team, I'm like,
what do you have to
I
say
fucking
now?
Like her as
too
a
much
coach.
Money? Boy, like, she's actually showing off for the money that she fucking earns. So.
Yes, I haven't seen any other WNBA coaches like her. So I'm just like, collect your bag, honey. Like, yeah. I don't. And not only that, because it's not just about her getting results on the court. It's like, if you look at, like, hold on. We're going to share another screen because I retweeted this video last night and I just need y'all to see this because it's like, this is not a scene we often see at a WNBA game. So there's no sound. I'm just going to put this on here and just like, let this play. This is not a computer simulation. This is really what this crowd was like for these past two games.
Yeah.
They were present. They were loud. They showed up for their team. And honestly, like if you look at the aesthetic on Instagram and on Twitter, like their whole brand aesthetic, I love it. Like I love the gambling theme. I love the whole raise the stakes thing. I love the, you know, house win stuff that they do, the poker chips for the players. I love all of it. Yeah. I really do. But I say all this to say, Becky Hammon is not only creating a winning team, she's creating a culture around this team with the Aces that's going to lead to more revenue in the future. What we've seen happen for this team is what I want to see happen for Derby.
Did you see, 100%. Did you see the video of Popovich in the
I did.
Room? That was so cute. That was so cute. What do I always say? We went on the road. Because it's just so cute. The whole thing is just so cute.
Should we play that one too?
Yeah. I just saw it this morning and I'm like, for sure that you had seen
it. I don't know which Instagram account I'm logged into.
Well. yeah, it was an ESPN, I'm pretty sure.
I put it in our story, so.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
I put something else in our story that we'll take a quick Kit Kat and talk about because it was funny.
I like that you call it a Kit Kat.
I don't know. You know, you don't need me, that's for sure. But it was great watching you guys play. It's been great watching you on TV. And the way you execute, the way you play physically, it's just beautiful to watch, honestly. No, you just play great basketball. And it's about consistency. So you got to keep it going. And for me, I always tell my teams the sweetest wins are which ones?
The ones on the road.
The ones on the road, baby. The ones on the road, and that's where you're going. They're the sweetest.
No.
I always do what she says.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's what I end up doing.
Yeah, that was super cute. And I really love the support that we're seeing between the NBA and the WNBA. Greg Popovich showing up. John Morant was at a couple of the games and even celebrated with the Aces after a couple of their wins. I feel like that's what sports should be. Even if you do play a sport where there's a division between genders, I still love to see that camaraderie on the whole, you know?
100%.
So I dig all of it. And... let's see, next week we'll probably talk more about the finals because I think by then it'll be over. I'm trying to see if there's any other points that we really, really needed to make besides that, like, Asia Wilson's a badass and it doesn't matter who's guarding Chelsea Gray. She's going to do whatever the fuck she wants.
No, I mean, at this point, I don't think...
Oh, let me play the other video real quick. Well, actually, no. I'll do that after we talk about the Saints real quick. So, the Saints came back in the fourth quarter to beat the Falcons. That was crazy. So, we actually had practice while this game was happening. And I was looking at my phone during breaks. But, like, we don't get a lot of breaks, especially as a coach. I got to, like, watch everything, right? So, I looked down. And I think one of the first things that I saw from this game was Taysom Hill scoring a touchdown and put the Saints up 7-3. And I was really excited. So for those of y'all who don't know, because I feel like we've gotten new listeners since last year. Like, yes, I love the Cowboys. I also love the Saints. I grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Like, I've been a Saints fan for life. But due to the fucking way the market is segmented here, I hardly get to actually watch the Saints, right? So it's just, there's just like Cowboy shit all around me all the time. And then with the Saints, it's like, I have to work a little bit harder. So sorry to my fellow Saints fans, if it seems like I've abandoned y'all a little bit. I just.
It's harder.
Yeah, it's harder. And like I said, being a bitch who loves sports is exhausting. So anyway, shout out to people who are willing to share their passwords to certain platforms so that I can actually watch my Saints through the season. Much love to you guys. But yeah, so we're practicing. I'm logged into the thing. I see Taysom Hill's touchdown puts the Saints up 7-3. I'm excited. By the next time I look down, the Saints were down 16-10. And I was just like, what the hell? And then going into the fourth quarter, the Falcons were winning 23-10. And then they scored a field goal to go up 26-10 with like a little under 13 minutes left. And I was just like, damn, Saints got a new coach. Jameis Winston is back behind center, and we are just fucking up. But if Jameis Winston is nothing else, he's resilient. Honestly, if Jameis Winston is nothing else, he's entertaining, but that's another conversation.
Yeah.
So a little more than a minute after they went down 26-10, the Saints got a touchdown. Shout out to Michael Thomas. And then a two-point conversion to make it 26-18. Neither team scored again till like almost 3.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, when another pass from Jameis Winston to Michael Thomas got 6 points for the Saints. And then they failed that two-point conversion, which would have tied the game. But instead, the Falcons were up 26-14. And then the final blow came with 19 seconds left when a 51-yard field goal by Will Lutz put the Saints up 27-26. So...
That's just such a comeback. I'm sorry
for the Falcons because the Falcons have developed a reputation for just like losing leads, you know? And this is another instance, but I'm so happy for my Saints. I'm so happy for Michael Thomas.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know a lot about his story, but he had an ankle injury in week one of, so he was Offensive Player of the Year in 2019. So people already were like, you know, Michael Thomas is a shit. It's not like he's just getting good. He had an ankle injury in week one of 2020, came back and played 8 games, including the playoffs. And then there was like some drama with him, like not getting the surgery when he should have. So basically he tried to rehab the ankle for a while. And then supposedly the Saints were in support of him rehabbing the ankle. But then whenever he decided to wait until June to get surgery on it, some people who are part of the Saints, June of 2021, some people who are part of the Saints, including Sean Payton, seemed very critical as though they weren't in support of it. So it was like really weird because it was almost like they tried to throw him under the bus. And then he was just like, no, like y'all knew that this was going to go down this way. I don't know. It seemed like there was some tension for a while and people were kind of scared because Michael Thomas is a valuable weapon. Right.
Right.
But anyway, he ended up having to have another surgery on the same ankle in the middle of that season. And so by the time he played week one of this year, it had been more than 20 months since he played football.
Ooh.
Yeah. Between all the surgeries and the rehab and him coming back. But he came back in this game. He had 5 receptions for 57 yards, but 2 of the Saints' 3 touchdowns were by Michael Thomas.
Sure.
So I'm like, he took his time coming back. It was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, shout out to Dak Prescott. We're going to get to that in a second. Before we get into the Cowboys, I just want to show you this cute video that I saw from the Cowboys Spanish affiliate this morning, because I feel like I learned more from this video than I do from Duolingo. I watched it like a bunch of times to like try to pick up some Spanish football terms.
Chris Godwin, por la opción escopeta, hizo el corredor atrás, Brady, detenido de nuevo detrás de la línea. ¿Y quién es?
It's Micah Parsons.
It's Micah Parsons que baila, se frota la panza en fin. Vaya aceleración por parte del número 11, Micah Parsons, llegando sobre Tom Brady. Al lado derecho está Mike Evans junto con Chris Godwin.
I was watching this over and over again to figure out what the Spanish term is for a sack. But it sounds like their Spanish term for a sack literally, like, directly translates to detained behind the line. Yeah. Like, they don't have, like, an actual word for it.
No.
Okay, because that's
as
what I heard.
As far as I know, no.
Yeah, because I heard, what was it? Let's see if I can remember. Detenido?
Uh-huh.
Detrás de la línea. Okay. Yeah.
Because
so
you guys coming in handy.
And I was like, wait, is that how you say sack? I was like expecting some cool word. Yeah. But I feel like anything that
like
is that
jumped behind the line.
Yeah.
That's literally what it means.
Right. I feel like anytime there's like a cool word that needs to be developed, they just use the word. Like they might just say sack, like at some point.
Maybe.
And then I was like, what is he saying about Micah Parsons? And it sounded like he literally said Micah Parsons is dancing and rubbing his belly.
That's exactly what he said.
And I'm like, this is
exactly
wonderful.
Exactly what he said.
So
yeah.
I didn't learn any cool terms, but now I know what detenido detrás de la línea means. Yeah. And I also know what was it? Frota de la panza.
Frota de la panza. So,
I learned some cool shit from this video.
He was hungry. The lion was hungry. The dance is so cute. Mike is just so adorable.
He is. Even though a lot of the fan base is turning against him.
I don't care. I don't care what you're gonna say. Once you have an actual good reason to talk shit about Micah, then you come talk to me. Mm. Until then, I don't give a fuck.
Mm. Mm.
Period. Talking shit. The best player out there the whole entire fucking game. Mm-mm. 2 sacks on Tom Brady in the same game. The fuck you talking about? Mm. What shit do you have to talk about? I don't care. Say it. Say it with your chest, actually. I want you to say it with your fucking chest. Anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm like,
you know,
I'm
gonna
let you finish.
You know, I love Mike. Like, that shit pisses me off. Like, if he was doing something wrong, whatever.
he's showing up and showing out. So I don't know what you got to say.
We should have worn capes today because we are here for our faves today. So for anyone who likes football but also lives under a rock, the Cowboys lost to the Bucks. So for the next segment, we went on for a while. And instead of making you sit through an almost 3-hour podcast, what I'm going to do is end this one right here and just pick back up with the next episode to hear us talk about all the Cowboys-related headlines and everything that we have to say about our faves on the team.
Yes.
Woo. Done.
Boom. Bam.